it's yours.
Okay. Well, thanks for the opportunity. Thanks for coming. And I hope it will be entertaining and you would choke on your food. We wouldn't produce any food hazard. So I was told that it should be like a colloquium style, and some pedagogic material should be given. And beforehand, I just apologize to the experts. So if it's boring, and if it's get boring, just ask question, and I realize that I have to speed up. Okay. So the goal of this talk would be to follow a case study, in particular synthetic H fields and fractional quantum Hall states of photons, and through that, I would like to highlight. What are the big questions that we are dealing in our many-body physics with photon program? What are the challenges? What are the opportunities? Why we're interested in studying many-body states with photons, etc. Okay. So the motivation of this field, I would say, it's of course theoretical. It's fun to explore anything explore any kind of model, but I would say that recently it has been a huge progress in experiment. There are really interesting experiment that has been accomplished in the past 4 or 5 years that we have been able to explore and develop some of the building blocks that we need for understanding many-body physics. In particular, can we make Hamiltonian models that are interesting? Can we implement some gauge field for photons? Can we have a strong spin orbit interaction for photons? Can we make them interact with each other at the single photon level, such that a single photon can block the transmission of another photon? And these are really recent progress in multiple platforms, from Rydberg atoms, quantum dot in the optical domain, circuit QD in the microwave domain. And it's going to be a chalkboard talk, so I'm not going to present any of those experimental platforms. But if you're interested, please come to me or anybody who's involved in this kind of research. So just given that we have this motivation, I would focus on this case, and I start by. Showing that how we can synthesize gauge field for photonic systems, how we can have like quantum Hall models in a photonic system, and particularly how we can implement some of the models like uniform magnetic field for photons, spin orbits, etc. And tell you about what are the experimental implications. Once we translate these models that are usually studied for electronic systems like quantum Hall effect, once we study them for non-interacting photons or for interacting photons, what does it mean? What kind of observable we should measure? And then I'll add interaction to the ingredients, a strong interaction between photons, and I'll describe how we can look for fractional quantum Hall states of light. And if we can implement that model, what are the ways to prepare it and maybe to detect it? So feel free to ask questions so that I know whether I'm going too slow or going too fast. Okay. So I start with synthetic gauge fields. Okay, so in order to study many of these topological models, we have to have some gauge field. And the simplest example is that if I have a lattice, and let's assume that my photon or my bosonic field is confined at these points, the essence is that if a photon starts to hop from these confined places around, it should acquire a phase that is non-zero. Okay, so that's a very abstract level. So the essence basically would be that if I go around a closed loop, I'll get a non-zero alpha. So more formally, if I have a uniform magnetic field, then the hopping of the photon So these are operators. I'll just I plus Hermitian conjugate, and then plus a ax. And so here I assume. Yeah. Plus Hermitian conjugate.
Can you say something about why it shouldn't bother me to think of photons as particles hopping on a square lattice?
I will get that. So right now I'm very formal, and I did not say why photons are actually confined. I just assume that if the photon is confined, and if the creation and annihilation operator of a photon at some site is this, then I have to have this Hamiltonian. Now I have to justify how I can confine that photon, and then I have to justify how can I get this non-zero. Okay?
What about polarization?
So right now I just ignore polarization. And we see that it actually comes. So I start with no polarization. I just assume that there is a boring photonic mode that is confined over here. Okay? But before I start, I just want to say that this is a single particle Hamiltonian, for example, an electron hopping on a lattice with uniform magnetic field is described by the same Hamiltonian, and it will give rise to Hofstadter butterfly. I just advertised it. We will get back to that. What does it mean for photonic systems? But this is a very known Hamiltonian. We know from 60s or maybe even. Okay. So now I want, let's assume that these are some confined photons and I want to imprint some phase. The natural way that you would think that you can imprint some photons is to put some magnetic field. We put a very strong magnetic field perpendicular in some direction. And because of magneto-optical properties, it should imprint some phase onto our photons. And it is actually true. Magneto-optical properties can give rise to these non-reciprocal phases. But usually they're very, very small. In particular, if I would like to have an alpha appreciable to pi, it's not basically possible in the optical. And it's not very controlled. So what can we do? We can basically go and synthesize the magnetic. That's why we said centrifuge. Otherwise, we could just put a magnetic field and study the same thing. Okay. So now, the way that we can actually synthesize it, again, this talk is biased very towards my research. So I apologize if I'm not covering everything in this. Just this is the way that we thought. Yeah, there are many ways actually to synthesize this gauge. The way that we thought about it is to start with the simple case. So let's assume that I want to make this link. So I have two sites, and I want to make this link such that I get this phase. In particular, I want to get a phase when I hop in the x direction. I'll acquire a phase, which is y dependent, and I want to get the null phase when I'm hopping in the y direction. Okay. So in order to have that, let's focus on the case of just two sites and a link. So in order to implement it, we just now assume a real system. Let's assume that these are two waveguides, have the same size, they constitute a resonator. I take their length to be m lambda. M is an integer number, lambda is the resonant wavelength at which I want the resonator to be resonant. Okay? And then I couple them with another ring, which is m lambda plus lambda over 2. Okay? So they are resonant with each other, but this is off-resonant. And now we have basically two polarization for light in these rings. The light can propagate in this direction or in the opposite direction. Okay? Now let's follow what happens to the photon that is hopping in the system. It will propagate this way. This is a directional coupler, so the photon, when it's coming in, it can only scatter in the forward direction, not in the backward direction. The requirement to have that scattering is that the coupling region should be larger than lambda, than the wave number of the photon. So it will couple like this. It will come here, and then because of this coupling, it will go here and then propagate this way. Okay? So now I said that this is lambda over 2, so this is anti-resonant. So when the photon comes in, it would like to go and circulate a couple of times, but this is anti-resonance, so it does not. It will just jump into the other resonance. Now, if it wants to come back, it will take this path, and before just completing the circle, it will hop into the left resonance. Okay? So when I'm hopping forward, I will take the upper path. When I hop backward, I will take the lower path. And now let's assume that I shift this resonator up and down such that the upper path and lower path are asymmetric. Then I can imprint the phase for the forward hopping photon and imprint the opposite phase for the backward hopping photon. Okay? So I can now be a little bit more formal. So this is the left resonator. This is the right resonator. And the photon is confined here and here. And again, I'm only looking at one mode. So M is some number, let's say 100, 200. So I'm just, the A operator is responsible to create or annihilate that photon at that specific mode. So the Heisenberg equation of motion for AL is equal to this. Some decay plus an left. So this is the in left, and then this is a out left, and the same for this one. So this is the electric field just outside the coupling region, and this is the electric field just before the coupling region. So what this equation describes is that the photon in this resonator decay at the rate given by kappa, which is dictated by this coupling material, and then it will also be pumped by the input photon that is coming here. Okay. And similarly, for the right resonator, I can write the same equation. So now this will be E in right. Okay? Mm-hmm. Yes?
Shouldn't it be a plus for the input part?
It's arbitrary. It's just your convention. It's electric field. We can put a phase. Okay, so now how the output field is related to the input field, out, left, or right, is related to the input field, left or right, plus 2k a left or right. Okay? So the reason that we have this equation is just boundary condition. The electric field on this side and the electric field on this side should be related to each other. So if I just write the electric field on the right side is a combination of this electric field and this electric field, and the electric field inside the resonator is this. So as I just mentioned, the phase is arbitrary. So we can actually put plus here, and then there will be a minus here, and then I bring it here, bring it on the other side. That will be the total electric field on the left side. But we can arrange it. It's just historically written like that. So now, what I just said in words, we can actually implement it. The electric field at this point and the electric field at this point are related to each other by just the propagating phase that I acquire when I go from here to here. So A right in is equal to A left out e to the I n k l. Well, l is the distance and n is the index of refraction. Okay? So by choosing this l, then I can write it as e out. In particular, I just choose it to be minus I minus 2 pi alpha. Okay? It's just like I chose the length so that I have this expression. Similarly, for the other side. So that was for the inverting in, AR out, the same minus I exponential, now plus 2 pi alpha. Okay. So now I don't do the whole derivation. The goal is that I would like to write, I would like to eliminate these fields basically, and I write an effective equation for the left resonator and right resonator. So I have two equations here, and then two equations here, four equations, and I have four unknowns. So I can eliminate it and just write an equation AR, AL, and then I k exponential minus 2 alpha a. Okay? So once I have this, I can claim that the effective Hamiltonian is just minus a l a, right? Minus 2 pi alpha or plus alpha. Okay, so what we did was that we basically eliminated the middle resonator because it was off resonant. This is one way to do it. There are many ways to do it. One can use transfer matrix formalism. One can do a Schrieffer-Wolf transformation. We just get the same Hamiltonian. The key was that the middle resonator was asymmetric. So I have a question. If the middle resonator was, I could choose this part, the forward propagating and the backward propagating, I could have had a phase for forward and backward not equal and opposite to each other. Why that's not possible? In principle, I can choose this phase to be anything. So the forward phase will be like 2 alpha, and the backward phase will be minus 3 alpha. What's the problem? First of all, we know that in the end, it should be wrong, because then our Hamiltonian is non-Hermitian. But why it doesn't happen is related to the fact that the total length is fixed. I fix the total length to be anti-resonant. That's right. So that fixed, it will fix that this phase and that phase will be equal and opposite to each other. So I realize that we're going to the napping phase. Yes.
Maybe it's related, but what sets the sign of n?
N?
Which can be any integer.
Yeah. No. N is the index of refraction.
Oh, sorry.
But the nonlinear coefficient can be positive or negative.
So the phase that comes from asymmetry is not tunable, no, on the device. One time you print it and it's...
You can actually change it. So exactly, it comes back to this index of refraction. And that's actually what we did also in the experiment, that you can put a heater here and change the optical length. So if you change the optical length, that effective index has changed. So the effective alpha would change.
So the outcome is time reversal invariance broken, or is it?
It's related to your first question.
Yeah.
So here I did not put any polarization, but I said that we have two modes.
Yeah.
We have this mode and this mode. See, so if I have to be careful, I should assign like a pseudo spin to this photon. So I'll take this one spin up and this one spin down, and then for this one alpha will be positive, for this one alpha will be negative. So here I have to have a sigma z. in the exponent. So this will be basically, this will be two copies of uniform magnetic field. For a spin up, magnetic field is positive. For a spin down, magnetic field is negative. So the decay here, it was a controlled decay. There are two sorts of decays. One is the decay to the outside world, which I neglected in this part, and then the decay into the wave current. But you see that whatever we decay here, it should come back on this side, or it should go back to the same resonator. So it will be eliminated. But the decay rate is the same, is kappa, just different way of writing.
I realize that the kappa is the kappa from coupling, but in order to get such a decay term, we need to assume that in the middle part you have many modes, right?
Yes, yes. That's why, so I cheated a lot here. So I assume that this is a single mode, and then this is a multi-mode. But one can do perturbation. One can assume that there are like five modes here, one mode here, one mode here, and I get the same answer. So the perturbation just to the, so maybe more technical. If I look at the modes, so this is M, this is mode M, this is M minus 1, this is mode M plus 1, etc. These are different modes of my resonator. I assume that the side resonators are here, and then the link resonators, the middle one, is here. So the photon comes out of this resonator. It will become a superposition of all these off-resonant contributions, and then it will go back again.
Excuse me. So if you consider the first correction beyond this adiabatic approximation, we use the physical effect in these small residual terms that occur, which is left over again.
This is actually exact if you are anti-resonant.
Anti-resonant.
If you are not anti-resonant, then there are two contributions. The alpha would change, and the effective tunneling would change. So one can write it exactly like transfer matrix, because so far it's completely linear physics. It's not hard to. Okay. So now one can actually put. So this was just a. Hopping with the phase, but as you see, we can be a little bit more creative and add maybe some impurity here, such that it couples the up photon to the down photon. That would be like an in-plane Zeeman field. That I have this spin, it was spin down, and it can couple it to spin up. If I put some impurity here, such that the photon comes in and then backscatters it in the other direction. Then you can have some situation that you hop from one side to the other side, but you flip your spin orientation. Okay. So one can play with this and then make all kinds of Hamiltonian. So that was actually the model that we were looking at. So here now I just did it for this link. Now let's assume that I do the same thing for all the links, and now for the upper row, I would do the same, but instead of alpha, I put 2 alpha. So here I get alpha phase, here I get alpha phase, here I get 2 alpha phase, here I get 3 alpha phase, etc. In this situation, if I go from here to here, I get alpha, here I get 0, because I just assume that it's symmetric, the coupler. Here I get minus 2 alpha, and here I get 0. So the overall, I get minus alpha phase. And then the same here, I get 2 alpha, and then I get minus 3 alpha, so I get minus alpha phase. So with this construction, actually, we made the one that is a uniform phase, but with the minus. Good? Okay. So now, once we have this Hamiltonian, then the spectrum is given by, it's known as Hofstadter butterfly. So alpha can go from 0 to 2 pi, becoming identical, and then E divided by kappa It will be something like this, and then now this is hard to do it on platform, and then there is butterfly. So if this is a rational number, then we have some bands that appear. So, Okay. So for an infinite system, or for a system on a torus, one gets a Hofstadter butterfly, where we have these magnetic bands, and in between there is basically nothing, if this is a rational one. Okay, and it is known that now, if I just not put the system on a torus, or if I assume that the system is finite, then apart from these bands, I also get some bands in between. And those are related to edge states that are propagating around the edge of the system. So some of them are going like that. And then some of them are going like that. And they correspond to the energy states that appear between those magnetic bands. Okay, so now so these are the same integer quantum Hall edge states for electronic systems. Now we have them for photonic systems. Now the question is that how do we see these edge states? We don't have we cannot gate the system. We don't have a Fermi level. The idea is very simple. Now let's convert it. Let's write it in a way that is usually done. So this is a magnetic band. This is an edge state. This is magnetic band. And this is another edge state. So here, the idea would be that we can excite the system at a given frequency, let's say this frequency. And if this frequency is resonant with these edge states, it would excite an edge. If it's resonant with the magnetic band, it will excite a bulk state. Okay. So then and then by choosing the polarization, so the way that we can excite the system is that we can come with a light. It will excite this mode. So that's the right mode. And then it will start to hop around the whole system, either in this way or in the opposite way, depending on its frequency. And it's very simple to understand. It's like a B dot L. So we have a uniform magnetic field. We have some states that are going this way, so they have positive angular momentum. And the states that are going in the opposite direction will have a negative angular momentum, so their energy should be split. So this will be, for example, clockwise going around the system, and this will be counterclockwise, if this is energy and this is the zero of the energy. Okay. Now, similar to integer quantum Hall states, these states are also robust against certain type of disorder. So in these optical systems, there are three types of disorder. One is the frequency mismatch. Basically, the length of these resonators can be different from each other. In an experimental implementation, for example, if it's a nanofabricated device, they vary from site to site. The other one is the loss, and the other one is a spin flip. Spin flip meaning that if I have some dirt here that would scatter the photon in the backward direction, then my photon will flip, and I'm no longer protected. So this kind of construction is actually robust to the frequency mismatch, and it's not robust against these two. And that has been actually experimentally verified. So not only one can actually image these edge states by putting a camera and then collecting these lights that are scattering off the resonators, but also one can do a more quantitative measurement of transport in such systems. For example, we expect that if I send a photon from this side and be resonant with the edge band, then it will go through the edge of the system and it will come out. And if I repeat the experiment for many experimental realization, many fabricated devices, those transmissions should be robust. While if I send a photon which is resonant with the bulk states, the photon will go into the bulk, and from one realization of this lattice to the other realization, the disorder would change a lot, so that the transport will change a lot. And then we will see a different noise. So if we just...
Is it clear what happened if there is a disorder in this bucket flux?
Yes. What do you mean?
What happens?
Ah, so...
A disorder in the flux.
Okay. So that would be... that would be like a uniform, a non-uniform magnetic field. So this is the same story. If it closes the gap, then it's out.
Well, let's try. Did you write an expression for alpha someplace?
Oh, no, I did not. So alpha is implicit over here. So alpha is given by the difference between this and this.
So can you tune alpha without having to remake the circuit?
Yes, so you can actually put like a heater add a free carrier. They would effectively change the index of refraction.
I see. So that's your only knot. So
that's right.
The amount by which you can explore that is fixed by the range of index of refraction.
That's right. And one can actually go from 0 to 2 pi because... It depends how far you can tune.
And how big are the experimental systems? How many lattice sites?
So we have been able to go to 20 by 20. And we could still see some... and we could still see the edges.
Which precision you can control alpha?
On each frayer, you mean from plaquette to plaquette?
No, but also within a single plaquette. So.
Oh, we can go from
within,
a few percent.
Of radians.
Yeah. So you don't want to be in a small alpha.
Yeah, no.
So that you become super sensitive. Okay. I forgot what I wanted to say. I wanted to say this robustness. So if I look at the transmission or some Wigner delay time, and this is, for example, the edge band, and this is the bulk band, and you look at the transmission, you get some transmission here, you get some transmission here, but then when you change your sample and you put another sample, the bulk state will have some other transmission, but the edge state will have the same transmission. This is real experimental data. Okay, so this was just the first part, that how we can actually implement linear models that have some topological property. Here we did not break the time reversal symmetry. There are some ideas how you can break the time reversal symmetry, very similar to the ideas in optical lattices. Now, let's assume that, for example, I have two resonators. I detune them with respect to each other, and then I modulate the frequency. I have two resonators. Maybe over here. If I have resonator A with omega, and then omega some frequency that they're detuned from each other, and now I have some coupling in between them, because they're just next to each other, so now I don't assume any middle resonator. Now, if I on top of this detuning, I also add some modulation of this type. That could be like modulating the index of refraction in this resonator, similar to here that we would slowly change the index of refraction. Now that let's assume that we change it very, very fast. Then one can write an effective Hamiltonian for this, in which you will get a hopping like this, some effective J, with some phase where this phase is exactly the modulating phase. So one can also break time reversal symmetry and have the same.
What will do that fast enough with this heating thing?
Heating is slow. Heating is slow. So one has to do it with carrier injection. That's how people make modulators, for example. Okay. Good? No question on this part? Now we want to add interaction.
What you described, what is actually measured in the experiment? What is a measure? Can you produce, you said there is like a quantum hole, can you produce a plot?
Okay. I was keeping that for the end. you ask, so now I have to answer. So the manifestation of robustness I just described. So if you look at the transmission or Wigner delay, we can see it. But then I think your question is that what is quantized in this system? What's the manifestation of quantization in this system? So since it's asked, let's answer. And the manifestation is actually very simple. It goes back to Laughlin's argument. So let's assume that we have an analyst. So here I have a uniform magnetic field alpha, and this is my lattice. So I forgot about my lattice. This is my lattice, and there is a phase alpha everywhere. But I make it into an annulus. And now, Laughlin's argument was that if I put a magnetic flux phi, and I change that from 0 to 2 pi, these edge states move by 1. In particular, if I have a band like this, then I have these edge states. This is another band. This is these states, and then I have also some states that are going in the opposite direction at the other edge. Okay? So now, the argument was that if I change phi from 0 to 2 pi, the spectrum should be the same, because 0 and 2 pi are the same. But during that, since these states wrap around this magnetic flux, they would shift upward or downward, depending on how they're wrapping around this magnetic flux. So this guy, for example, goes up, this guy goes down, and then they only go by 1 if they're one of these edge states. Okay, so that's why quantum Hall is quantized. What's the manifestation for an optical system? It would be very similar. Let's assume that I'm scanning the system with some incoming photon frequency omega. So this will be bulk. This will be bulk. And this will be edge. So here it corresponds to here. This corresponds to this. And this corresponds to this. Okay? Yeah.
Can I just ask, what is the analog of the Hall of that? Unquantized Hall of that.
Oh. That will be, you have a magnetic field. You just put some... you cannot keep the charge here. So the analog...
So I mean that's the Hall effect, I guess, measures the charge density.
So now instead of your charge is actually moving, let's downgrade. What would be the Lorentz force here? That you put a photon somewhere, and then the photon will just go around and make some go this way or that way. How would be what would be the equivalent of the electric field for these photons? It would be detuning these rows with respect to each other. That makes sense? So if I put an electric field here, then the energy from here to here should be different in a linear way. So if I want to simulate the effective electric field, It would be like a linear detuning that I should apply to each row. Does that make sense?
And the current?
So I can prepare, let's say, a photon here.
Yeah.
And then I can consider it that, or I can give it a velocity. Then in the presence of this uniform magnetic field, that photon will take some path. Here, sorry, maybe I was a little bit too fast. So here, we couple the photon at single point with a fixed frequency. So I select the frequency in my transmission spectrum, but I couple to all momenta. So that's why I can couple to it will find the corresponding momentum. But I could, in principle, send a photon into the system with a fixed frequency and also a k momentum. For that, I have to couple my system like this. So my photon not only couples to one site, but to multiple sites.
So you're
and
trying then to describe something that's analogous to a current?
Yeah. If it's a current with some momentum.
You've already described something analogous to a voltage.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
That would be
the whole resistance, the ratio of those.
Yeah, yeah. But okay, in the end, no. But in the end, one has to be careful because the conductance here is capped at one. The transmission of photons here, if I look at the transmission as a function of frequency, it is always capped at one. We cannot get more photon out of the system that we have put into the system. So this is always bounded up to here. Right? Now, if the system is finite so that they can see actually these states, then they would appear as some peak. Sorry, it should be a function. So they would just appear as some peaks, equidistant. Why? Because it's a edge has a linear dispersion, at least in the middle of the gap. So they're just equidistant. Okay. So now, if I add this phase, this flux, then these states, either wrapping around in the positive direction or negative direction, they start to move in this direction or in the opposite direction. So okay. So now after 2 pi, I'm guaranteed that I get the same peaks, but they have either moved by 1 or 2, by 3, etc. So it's not surprising. We started with non-interacting photons. It's interference. And just coming back to the same interference pattern is the manifestation of quantization of this Hamiltonian. So there is no charge conservation or this Hamiltonian, I change its gauge invariant, and I'm guaranteed to come back to the same interference pattern. How many times I shift, that would be my winding number. Yeah.
Quantization in the sense here, but because this is all classical ways of single particle physics.
Yeah, yeah.
Not real quantum in that sense. And you have to put interactions. And
yeah.
So.
Yes. No. So far, hopefully, I will have some time to add interaction.
Okay. Also, there is no way to measure the fact that there was kind of one photon pumped out in this.
Oh, like a single, single photon. No. No.
Because so with this, you are saying that all the observables are periodic of 2 pi.
Mm-hmm.
But you are not showing.
Because our measurement is completely different. Mm-hmm. In an electronic system, you fill up to here.
Yeah.
And then you put 2 leads, one electron go to the inner lead and the other electron to the other lead. Here we are just scanning the whole spectrum all the time. So,
for instance, there are different observables, right? If you integrate the density, you have a relation to the Chernobyl and some configuration. So,
here we are not looking at the Chern number, we are measuring the winding number. how many times these peaks move is the winding number. And well, that since that's related to the Chern number of the bulk, then this could be like the measurement of the topological invariant of the bulk. Okay? So now in the remaining time, I would like to add actually interaction. So so hopefully everybody is familiar with Landau quantization. So for fractional quantum Hall state, we should have this gauge field that we just talked about. We should add interaction, and then we should expect to have some fractional quantum Hall states. Okay. So before describing this, I just want to go back and talk about a continuum system. So if I now assume that my magnetic length, I want to skip the derivation. So let's assume that my orbitals can be described by some magnetic length, and that magnetic length is much larger than the lattice spacing. So this system becomes effectively a continuum system. And we know how to solve the continuum system. It's the Landau problem. So this is P minus EA. And that's a real charge. And then this describes a uniform magnetic field. So this can be written either this way or this way, depending on the gauge that you choose. And what you realize is that you get the quantization of your levels. They're separated by cyclotron energy. And they're degenerate. Okay? So my cyclotron energy will be this, and the energies will be, and then the degeneracy will be basically the total flux in the system divided by the flux quantum. Okay, so the more intuitive way to understand it is that we have a two-dimensional system. We can make a Heisenberg-limited orbit. The radius of this orbit is given by LB, where LB is C H over B. How many of these I can pack into my system gives the Landau level degeneracy. So that's n phi. So if this is LB, this number can be also written as LX LY, which is this area of the system, divided by 2 pi LB squared. Okay? So now, in the symmetric gauge, the states lowest Landau level, the states of the system can be written. So this is a complex number. It describes the position of the particle in a two-dimensional system. With this m, and this is z m, and then over 4. Assuming that LB is 1. And M goes from 0 to N5 minus 1. So there are N5 value for M. So the reason I told this short review, I hope that everybody was familiar, it was just to refresh your mind, was that the filling factor in quantum Hall effect is important. So the filling factor is the number of electrons divided by the number of magnetic flux. So if nu is an integer, then we fill up, let's say 3, fill up 3 Landau level, and then everything above is empty. That's why we get integer quantum Hall effect. So that's why it's integer. Now, if nu is smaller than 1, then all the particles are here. We have more particles than the number of degenerate states that are available. That means that we can arrange them such that not only they decrease the kinetic part of the Hamiltonian, which is this gauge field, but also the interaction, assuming that the interaction is weaker than the cyclotron energy. Okay. So now, in an optical system, we in a bosonic system, we could expect the same physics, either with atoms or photons. In particular, if we prepare the system, say nu equals 1/2, where the number of photons is half of the number of states that they have available in this position, they should rearrange themselves such that they would decrease their kinetic energy. Okay. So now, what type of interactions photons can have? It turns out that photons have, in most cases, have short-range interaction. Okay. Because photons do not interact usually. The way that they interact is that through some dipole. So a single photon comes in, it excites the dipole, and the second photon will come in and then see that this dipole is excited. So basically, through that dipole interaction, some interaction will be mediated for two photons. So usually, the interaction that we have the same magnetic Hamiltonian that we have over there, plus some short-range interaction, which on a lattice it could be written like this, or in the continuum limit, it can be written as a delta function. Now, we assume that U is large. Comparable to J. And that's not a crazy thing to assume. It basically means that the nonlinearity coefficient in front of this nonlinear part of the Hamiltonian is so much that the presence of a single photon inside the resonator can shift the tunneling so much, can basically shift the resonant frequency of a resonator by the tunneling value. So another way to write it is that I can write it as A dagger A, and then compare it with J, which is some A dagger A. So if this, I put one photon here or two photon here, it would become comparable to J. So this means that the presence or absence of a photon in a resonator could block the tunneling from the neighboring resonator. That's called the photon blockade effect. And that has been observed in experimental setups. Okay. So now, what would be the ground state of the system in this situation? Turns out that the ground state of the system can be described by Laughlin state. Okay. Why?
Can I ask?
Yes.
For this U, gather that is a property of the glass that you just fixed.
I did not describe how we get this U. It's a whole business. One has to synthesize this U.
Also.
But the answer to the question is that intrinsic U is very, very small. So, for example, if I get a piece of silicon, then I have to put n to the 4, n to the 5 photons, such that it would block the presence of another photon. It would shift the resonator by its line width. So if I want to get 10 to the 4 to 1, then one has to do some synthetic way. One has to use some synthetic way to increase that U. So the way that actually this Laughlin state is constructed is that we have this lowest Landau levels, and then we arrange them such that there is a node whenever one particle sees the other particle. And you immediately see that the expectation value of the interaction energy for this wave function is zero. because if I just assume that this is the interaction, then psi H interaction is absolutely zero. Because the interaction only happens when two particles are on top of each other. And we just put nodes whenever two particles meet each other. So Laughlin state is the exact ground state for short-range interaction. It does not mean that the Laughlin state is gapped and the only state. But again, it turns out for new coils 1/2, it is the only ground state and it is gapped. Okay? So now...
You assuming U is positive or negative?
I assume that U is positive. So if U is negative, then again, this state would be an eigenstate of the system, but it would be highly excited. That doesn't mean that you cannot see these states, because all the photonic states are actually excited states physics. None of them is ground state physics. Ground state is vacuum. So negative could be actually another bit. Okay, so I have how many? 5 minutes. So I just want to highlight what are the issues using this model. So it's fine. People say, okay, you have your synthetic gauge field, then we should see fractional quantum Hall states of photons. One experimental issue is that can we have U in a scalable way? For example, let's say 20 sites by 20 sites. Can we get U so large for all these resonators? That's a technical challenge. But a more, I would say, fundamental challenge, yeah?
Why is U compared to J the relevant scale? Because it doesn't, I mean, you don't need U to be bigger than the cyclotron frequency.
Yeah, so, okay. So then...
U to be bigger.
Yeah, that's... So this is the energy, and this is U as a function of J, let's say. So Laughlin state and nu equals 1/2. Laughlin state is zero. This is n times omega c over 2. Then if U is zero, it's basically macroscopically degenerate. And then immediately, once U is non-zero, then you have a gap. So you're right. You should not have U comparable to J. And then once U is much larger than J, then basically this gap is given by a fraction of J. And here it's given by a fraction of U. Okay. The reason is that it's more technical. Because just J is comparable to also your loss that we did not talk so far about. And you want the photon to interact with each other before they get lost. So I'd say this should be more like gamma. But since J and gamma are comparable,
Doesn't J also set the bandwidth, assuming you're on something like a square lattice, so you don't have perfectly flat bands?
That's right, yeah. Oh.
So I would think that U has to be greater than or equal to J just to avoid getting a metal as the ground state once you have some band curvature.
Yeah, so here I assume that alpha is small. So in the beginning, I assume that the magnetic length is larger than the lattice spacing. Or another way, since all these systems are synthetic, you can assume that not only you have the nearest neighbor tunneling, but also some tunneling like this, then the band can become a little bit more flat, yes. And also, like this two-body interaction, one can also do three-body interaction and then look at Fafian states. But let's just focus on this, the time that I have. I want to highlight what's the problem here. So the problem here is that we started with fixed photon number, and that is the problem. We cannot make a macroscopic large photon number state and then expect that it will become a fractional quantum Hall state.
Mohammed,
yes.
The lambda is about telecom kind of wavelengths?
Here I did not specify, but it can be anything. The experiment that we did was telecom. It can be done in the optical domain. There is an experiment in the RF domain. And there are experiments in the microwave domain underway.
But you said M, you needed 100 lambda.
It was just for our case. Doesn't have to be. And that's just one construction. So the usual way that that one do quantum optics is that you take a black box, you send some laser field, and then some of it will be reflected, some of it will be transmitted. And a laser field is a coherent state, so it's a Poisson distribution of number states, so something like this, with some coefficient, with some exponential coefficient in front. So what happens here, if I send a coherent state, it has one photon, it has two photon, it has three photon, etc. And if that photon number matches one of these Laughlin state, then at that photon number manifold, we would get a fractional quantum Hall state. So if I post-select, if I sit here, and then say, no, okay, I only look at n's, that n corresponds to nu equals 1 half, then at that specific level, one could prepare a Laughlin state. But that can only work when b is much smaller than 1. The reason is a little bit involved. It's because of the fact that the system is open. So all I said so far is the Hamiltonian part of the evolution. In fact, if I want to be more careful, I have to look at the density matrix. And in the density matrix, I have some Hamiltonian part, and I have some part that is related to the loss. And this loss starts to put photons from one manifold to the other manifold. So I get a lot of quantum jumps between these states from the top to the bottom. And if I go into this limit when beta is very, very smaller than 1, so this can be approximated to 0, 1, order of 2 photon, then I can actually ignore the quantum jumps from the higher level to the lower level. And one can make a Laughlin state of 2 photons, 3 photons, 4 photons. So there are a couple of experiments that people are trying to make Laughlin states with a few photon number, okay? But again, that's not exactly what we want. What we want is to have a macroscopic scheme to prepare such states. And that's one of the problems all over many body exploration with photons. And one idea that we had with Elliot Coppett and Steve Simon was to use the incompressibility of these states to prepare them in a fixed filling factor. So the question that we asked was that let's assume that the system is incompressible at some n, where n is given by this number. Can I use this incompressibility, which means that I cannot add particle by the same frequency that I subtract a particle, and prepare the system at that specific filling factor. So I just say how it works in two sentences. Is that okay? And then I finish. So for systems that are flat band and are not gapped from below, meaning that if the energy as a function of number of particles is like this, so this is the n number, and then I have a gap over here where n is n here, and then n minus 1, we have an opportunity because we can put particles one by one resonant with the lowest Landau level. And the particles don't see each other. So I put the single photon first, and I put the second photon first, and then I put the third photon. But they rearrange themselves such that they don't see each other. So there is no interaction. Putting 0, 1, 2, 3 photons does not cost any energy until I hit a gap state, which is the case for n equals 1 half, and I can no longer put a photon into the system. Now, the problem with photonic systems is I lose photons, so I can lose a photon and I come here. In this situation, I create two half holes. As long as the holes do not propagate too much, I can repair the system and come back again. So we are pushing the system by this single photon device that I did not describe. But then this single photon device is tuned such that the frequency of the photon is equal to the lowest lambda level energy. And once I want to add another photon, it can go. And when I lose it, I prepare it back again. So I'll get to some steady state, which is a Laughlin state, plus some error. Some of the errors are here, some of the errors are here. And that would be like a finite temperature. Okay. So thank you very much for your attention.
Did I understand right that you actually increase coupling using like magnetic field and also maybe impurities?
We synthesize this magnetic field basically. So we don't add any external magnetic field. External magnetic field could give rise to this, but it's very, very small. Like it would give a alpha 10 to the minus 5. But here we synthesize that magnet.
So one of the differences with fermions or fermionic Laplace wave functions, I guess, is mainly that filling fractions are different. You can only have even denominator filling fractions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Other differences?
Well, no, in this case, no.
Okay.
So, for example, here M should be 2, 4, etc. But, for example, if I want to have a Fafian state, then here nu should be equal to 1. And then for the whole series will be like K over 2, where K can be 1, 2, 3, 4, etc.
Joel?
It seems like an easier step along the way toward the fractional case would be just turn off the magnetic field and make something like a Bose-Hubbard model, which is possible with like atomic bosons.
That's actually one of the things that a lot of people have been.
And has that been like where are people as far as accomplishing that with photons and specifically seeing kind of the ground state of the Bose-Hubbard model?
Nothing. So again, the problem is to have a scalable way to make U. One of the reasons you might actually like the fractional quantum Hall is that you may think that all the disorders and the problems will be solved because the system is gapped. Coming back to Bose-Hubbard, the problem is a scalable way to make U on a system. But here you would think that like a local disorder will not perturb your state.
Right, and if you could have flat bands, then the condition is less severe than you could.
Exactly.
Right.
Another issue with the Bose-Hubbard, apart from the implementation, it's also how do we prepare it at that specific filling factor. There is no chemical potential for light. So we had a proposal how to synthesize chemical potential for light. But is this the best way to do it? I'm not sure. That the same issue arises again, that we cannot fix the photon number.
Maybe you can also have different phases with the non-equilibrium Bose-Hubbard model, not only. So there are different phases which are predicted theoretically. So there are new physics also, not only sure. Emulation.
What is actually the synthesized field? What is the synthesized spin?
Mm-hmm.
And then, I guess, if there are systems of the size 20 of the cell, can you do this experiment on the computer?
Mm-hmm.
And if the real experiment disagrees with the computer experiment, what is the conclusion?
So, I think you're saying that we can do it on a computer while we're doing it.
I'm asking.
I'm rephrasing. The reason I mentioned in the beginning, so we want to try to build these building blocks that we require to get to some interesting many-body state. The first part was completely linear, and you can not even do it 20 by 20. I would say you can do it by 100 and 100. I don't know what's the limit. But for the linear part, exactly, one can do it on a computer. The interesting physics arises when we add the interaction plus that gauge field.
But what is the synthesized field and the synthesized
spin? Synthesized spin. So the synthesized field will be this magnetic field that we describe here. That synthesized spin would be these two modes of light. Okay. We have a ring, the Maxwell's equations are time reversal, symmetric, so invariant, sorry, and then you get two states.
Last question. Is there ways to experimentally measure locally the structure of edge states?
Yes, okay. You can image it.
Image.
Yes. And that's one of the advantages here. These are like the edge states in the linear domain, for example. They're like 10 micron size. They're macroscopically big, so one can actually image them.
So one can even
control them. So these heaters or changing the local index of refraction, you can really couple another, for example, gauge field only to the edge, not to the bulk. So the local, the fact that we can actually control these things locally is also another difference in synthetic systems.
Thank you very much.